Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Real Freedom, real estate leverage freedom with the goal to help you build time and financial freedom through opportunities in real estate. I'm your host, Mike Swenson. If you want to get started on your real estate investing journey or anywhere in real estate, check out our website, freedomthroughrealestate.com. That's freedomthroughrealestate.com. We've got lots of great information there, all of our episodes, blog articles, information to help you figure out what's going to be your best path in side of real estate. And today is a very, very special episode. So we're celebrating two big milestones, which happen within the same week. We've got episode number 300, and we're also celebrating our 5-year anniversary as a podcast. And so it's been 5 years since we launched this show. Actually, I think it's 5 years in 1 week, but it coincided really well with 300 episodes. For those of you wondering at home, how does that work? There was a period I did 2 episodes per week, and then got to be a lot balancing my job as well. So we cut back to one. So that's how we got to 300 in 5 years. But honestly, I had no idea when I started the podcast where this would lead. I just really wanted to share conversations, stories, lessons that could inspire people to help them in their real estate journey. And here we are 300 episodes later. We've got listeners all over the world, as well as the country here, which I'll share more about those stats later. And today we're going to go a little bit behind the scenes, share a little bit more about the origin story, why I started it, a little bit about my background, what I'm doing in real estate, and some other behind the scenes stuff, and then talk a little bit about the future. So if you've been with me since day one, or if this is your first episode, welcome. We're glad you stumbled upon us, and thanks for being here. So let's dive right in. Welcome to the Real Freedom Show, where we inspire you to pursue your passion to gain time and financial freedom through opportunities in real estate. I'm your host, Mike Swenson. Let's get some real freedom together. First things first, you know, I just want to say thank you to everybody that's been a part of this show. Huge shout out to my assistant who works with me, Ella, or Jezreel, as she goes by as well. I just want to thank her so much because this episode and this podcast would not be possible without her. And so she's been with me for probably close to 3 years now. So a lot of the posting that you see, the videos that you see are really a result of her. So thank her so much for what she's done. So that being said, I hope that this show has allowed you to learn more about real estate, learn more about people's stories. You know, when I interview guests and we meet for a couple minutes before we dive into the recording, I say, hey, the goal here is I want to have a good story to inspire people to get into real estate or maybe see a path different from what they're where they're on right now inside of real estate that they want to take. Or they see some sort of, you know, story of, hey, this person had a similar background. This person came from a similar field as I did, maybe had a similar mindset and got into real estate and had some success. And if they did it, I can do it too. And so that's really the point of the show here is to highlight great stories, to highlight people doing great things, and also to make it relatable. I want you to hear a story that you're like, yeah, I hear that and I think I can do it too. And I want to jump in. And so that's really the reason today why we exist and why we want to continue those stories. But kind of going back to the origin story. So for those that don't know me or don't know much about my background, I really am an operations person. And so I've been in real estate operations since 2014. Before that, I worked operations for a nonprofit for 10 years. And in the real estate side, I always told people, you know, I was okay being the guy behind the curtain because we had agents on our team. I really wanted to highlight the agents and make sure that they were seen and people would hire them, right? To buy and sell real estate. And it was primarily residential real estate. And so we jokingly said I was the guy behind the curtain and I didn't care if anybody knew who I was. I'm an introvert by nature, really, really high introvert. If you found me in a group of people, I'm probably off to the side just listening. But one-on-one conversations, obviously I love people. I love having conversations, but you put me in a group of people and I do naturally just kind of gravitate towards being introverted. So I was on this real estate team for 5 years, 6 years, and started my own team. So I realized here I am, somebody, you know, I had spoke on stage for our brokerage at events, at breakout sessions. And so I had talked to many real estate admin, hundreds of admin, you know, while being on stage. And people knew me for being the behind the scenes guy and knew me for being the ops and admin guy. But as I started my team, nobody knew me as the team leader or the agent. And so I was looking for a way to get out in front of the camera. And I also saw the importance of getting things on film, right? Obviously, you know, it's only been 5 years, but even back then, I knew the importance of getting comfortable in front of a camera, learning how to talk, being on something like this, listening to yourself talk, right? I know it's a big fear for a lot of people, but for me, I knew I needed to get comfortable in front of people to be able to do that. And if people were going to come to the team, work with me, whatever future opportunities unfolded, I knew that I wanted people to be able to find me. And so it started with kind of that seed of how do I create something? Because I'm a process person, how do I create something consistent, something that's going to build and grow over time? You know, if I created short form content, which I do some of that, a little bit less of that now, I can do it or I can't do it, right? But if I have a weekly podcast, I know that I have to do it week in, week out. Now there's been a couple of, you know, best of episodes that we've shown, but for the most part, for the better part of 5 years, every single week, there's been less than 10, I would say maybe 6 to 8 episodes where we've maybe done bests of, but otherwise I've had this going for 300 episodes in a row. And so I love that kind of scheduled, consistent thing that I need to do. Behind the scenes, it doesn't have to be consistent. I've recorded, I think I've done 4 episodes this week. Well, then next week I don't have to do a recording, or the week after I don't. So I'm always just watching the guests and the guest load, but I wanted to create something consistent. And so for people that wanted to see me or learn more about me, they could check out the podcast. And it's a way of selling yourself without selling yourself, right? I really don't like telling people what I do or, you know, how great I am or stats and things like that. But if you go watch my episodes or if you go watch my videos, you can get a pretty good sense of who I am, what I stand for, and I can share great information too. So I've recorded, you know, content on information. Hey, if you want to learn more about this thing, check it out. So I wanted to get some game film out there, get experience in front of the camera and get comfortable talking to people, asking great questions. And so I knew I wanted to interview people, but the funny thing is I said, look, I remember telling somebody, I don't want to do a podcast because everybody does a podcast. And I learned from Pat Flynn. So if anybody knows Pat Flynn from Smart Passive Income, way back in the day, he ran a blog, but then got into podcasting. And so I was watching some of his content about podcasting. And the thing that really struck me is he said, look, when you die, your kids can always go back and watch you on video. And if I create content, they could do that too. But a podcast, something like that, it's a way to leave a legacy. It's a way for your family to go back and watch you and remember you. I know for me, like that would be awesome thinking about some of my relatives that have passed away. Like it'd be fun to be able to go back and see stuff on video of them. And I thought if I could do this consistently, then it's something for my kids. Also, what it turned into is as I got more into investing in real estate, we're building a legacy for our kids. And so it's something where they don't have to do real estate. If they want to do real estate, they can. But either way, what we're building here is something that can be passed on for generations. And so on the content side, that really struck me. You know, I'd love to have something like that. So that was kind of why I decided to turn it into a podcast. And then honestly, from an operations and logistics standpoint, it wasn't that hard. So you go to a website, get yourself syndicated to all the different podcasts, you know, fill out some forms and some information. It takes a little bit of time, but then the process itself is not that hard. I can upload the episode and it pushes it all out to all the podcast players. And so I used to do the editing myself, but now we have somebody that does the editing and it doesn't take a ton of time to continue to create this. It takes some planning and proactivity on the front end, but now we've got something cool, something that has stood the test of time. You know, there's a ton of podcasts out there that have 5 episodes or 10 episodes because they're so excited about it. And then they give up on it and they realize it's harder than they thought, or it's not, you know, it takes more consistency than they thought. But that was the early stage. Now, at that time in my career, I had just launched a residential real estate team. And so I was thinking it's cool to interview other people inside of real estate, but the benefit was really coming back to hire me to be your residential real estate agent or agents if you want to come join a team that I think is pretty cool. Here's this guy that's leading the team and here's what I'm doing. However, when I started to interview people and people that were doing bigger things on the investor side of real estate, my eyes were open that I can do this. I can do this too. And I think that's one learning for people is most people that are out there doing bigger things than you, they're not necessarily smarter. They're probably just have taken more action, which we'll talk about in some of the lessons learned. But I knew that I could do that. And so I started to see people that were doing this And so it helped me to learn. So I tell people, for me, podcasting is like double dipping and triple dipping my time. Number one, I'm making great connections. Number two, I'm adding value for them, giving them a chance to share more about their story, get their word out, get their message out. Number three, though, it's also helping me to strategize for my future and what I want to do. And going back to the networking piece, I can also connect people. You know, hey, I might not be interested in a particular asset class or a certain, you know, area of real estate, but if I talk to somebody, I can say, hey, why don't you go talk to so-and-so? This is somebody that's doing that at a high level. And so there's a lot of that value out there. And then obviously it's for you guys, the listeners, being able to provide some inspiration, some stories, some direction on what to do in your career. I think there's a ton of value in that. And so I listen to podcasts when I'm going for walks, when I'm in the car, driving around. I think it's great. It's a way for me to continue to learn and grow in my car. And so I think there's a ton of value there. And so over those 5 years, my message has changed. Now, here we are. I started a residential real estate team when I first started this podcast. And here I am, pretty much exclusively working with investors to buy apartment complexes and some other investment stuff too, some short-term rentals, some small multifamily, some consulting, different things like that. But my life has completely changed in 5 years in terms of the direction of where I want to go. Now, I still would say I'm still just getting started on the investment side. There's so much more that I want to do, but this podcast has been a phenomenal opportunity for that. So hopefully that gives you kind of the backstory of why I created it, what I was planning on doing with it. But yeah, as many things do, they evolve over time. And instead of stopping this podcast and launching something else, I created a vision that was wide enough, you know, helping people create time and financial freedom through opportunities in real estate. That's broad enough that I can take it where I want to go. And so we have agents on, we have admin staff on, we have investors on, we have flippers on, we have entrepreneurs and other spaces on, but it's all inside of the real estate space. And so you get a mix of stories, a mix of backgrounds. So that's kind of the heart of why we did this. And for those of you listening, maybe early on in your journey, that's what we're going to continue to do, is to share great stories of people that are doing this stuff. I was nervous. I had a ton of doubt. I watched myself on video and hated it, hated how I looked. So for those of you out there that are considering a podcast, considering doing more on video, I had all those same reservations and feelings, and I just pushed through it. And so it's okay. I view this as like my stage behind a camera, right? I can be on stage and I want to do more stuff on stage. And yet I'm here on behind camera talking to you, the viewer. As I look into my camera here, for those that are listening, I'm looking into the camera, talking to the audience, helping you guys with those concerns you have, those uncertainties you have, not knowing what to do in real estate, not knowing who to go to for help. I want this to be a resource for you. So those were the early days. That was the plan. The vision has changed and grown, but what stays the same is I'm just as excited about helping people inside of real estate. And so if I can be a connection for you, if I can, you know, if there's a guest that you want to see or listen to, I love to help people. I'm excited when people are excited to be on the podcast and when they post, hey, I was super excited to be on the Real Freedom Podcast. That just really excites me and gets me jazzed up to know that I'm helping people accomplish their mission of getting their word out about whatever they're working on as well. So some cool stuff. I also tell people, I want people to have game film out there of me, right? I think more than anything, I'm less concerned about the business that comes in, right? The ROI of doing the podcast. The ROI of doing a podcast isn't good, at least right now. I've spent way more money than I've made on the podcast in terms of direct dollars. Now, that being said, the nice thing is it helps to earn people's trust more quickly. So as I do work with investors, and it also provides credibility. So as I work with investors and I say, hey, I'm on a podcast, here's my podcast, check it out. Like I said, I don't have to sell myself. They go listen to the podcast. And it's so cool to hear. I sometimes follow up with clients, hey, want to see how things are going? And I hear people say like, oh, wow, things must be going well for you because I've been listening to the podcast. And so it's that kind of connection point, I think, that has been one of the most helpful things, is you can go check out and find out who I am. And if you want to work with me or you like connecting with me, great. But I don't have to give you my pitch deck. I don't have to, you know, run down the list of all my qualifications. You can go find it and you can go listen to me and probably find out more just in a conversation that I have with somebody, kind of how I operate and how I act and hopefully the values that I have, and that stuff comes across. So I think for me, kind of that game film, if I'm an athlete, I want to have my mixtape out there, my highlight tape for college coaches to come see, or pro coaches or scouts to come see. And here, that's what this is for me. This is my game film for people to check me out, see who I am, and hopefully build and earn some trust with people. Are you looking to get started or scale in real estate investing but don't know your next step? Are you overwhelmed thinking about finding deals, analyzing deals, doing due diligence, and managing properties on top of it? Go ahead and push the easy button and invest with us. Real estate investing is what we do full time. We've done dozens of deals with hundreds of doors. We have the knowledge and experience to handpick the best deals that most investors can't find. We've got large off-market deals all the time where you can hopefully find returns and economies of scale that you just can't find on your own. The best thing is it's 100% passive to you for less capital than you put down trying to acquire a property on your own. Don't let this year go by where you don't make the leap, add to your portfolio, or you just sit in analysis by paralysis. To find out more, visit freedomthroughrealestate.com and click on invest. You can book a call and learn more there. So get to scaling your portfolio now with us by your side. So that's some great lessons that I've had. You know, one of the things that I want to get into here is let's share some stats, some cool stats about the podcast. You know, I never would have imagined here I am in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota. Early on in the podcast, a lot of the listeners, when I would go in and check, it would show they're from Minnesota, and the podcast kind of stat service that I use doesn't necessarily give all the little towns, but it was a ton of stuff from Minnesota. But the funny thing is so going back now, looking at all of our episodes, actually 78% of the listeners are from North America. And so we've got 8% in Australia, Oceania. We've got 7% in Asia. We even have 46 downloads in South America, which is our lowest continent. But South America, for whatever reason, hasn't caught on. But as you look to Asia and down around there, we've got a lot. So in terms of countries, 74% of our listeners are in the United States, 8% Australia, like I said, 3% in Canada, 3% in Singapore. And then we've got a handful of them that are 1%. In terms of cities, as we go and we look at top downloads in cities, Brisbane, Queensland is actually number one for downloads. Number two is Los Angeles. No surprise there, large city here in the United States. But then we've got some other states that are intriguing. We've got Missouri, we've got New Jersey, Wyoming, Virginia, Georgia, and then actually after that, Minneapolis. So, you know, quite a few people in other cities and areas have found the podcast and listened to the podcast outside of Minnesota. So Minnesota is probably 10 or 12 in terms of the list. So pretty cool to see where all of those downloads come from. In terms of top episodes, it's kind of been a mix of early days. We had some great episodes, and then we've also had, you know, some recent ones that have done well. But as I go and I look at most popular, hands down, we did a regular episode, and then we did a best of episode. Michael Elefante, for those that don't know, he does short-term rentals. Very, very popular. I had actually had him reached out to him because I wanted him to be on episode 100 for me. And he said yes so quickly that we actually had him on episode 89. So he didn't make it to 100, but I was reaching out to him with the goal of being on 100. But his original episode and even the best of are our top two episodes that we've had for downloads all time. So great resource for short-term rentals. Other top people that we've had, Brian Carruthers. So he's an entrepreneur. He works with a company called Legal Shield and helps a lot of agents and entrepreneurs as well with different things. So he's a very well-known entrepreneur. Fantastic. And then we've got some people that have done tax liens. So we had an episode of somebody acquiring properties through tax liens, entrepreneurial stories, mobile home parks. You know, those are kind of some of the big episodes here. So yeah, we've had, you know, of our top 10 episodes, a couple of the early ones, we had episode 9, episode 37, episode 180, 189. So some of those. And then a recent one here, episode 279, Vince Gethings, who $100 million in assets and owns 6 businesses. So some really cool stories. Jeff Hotz owns a We Buy Ugly Houses franchise. That one did really well. So just cool stories, like I said, of different entrepreneurs doing different things, just sharing their stories. And so that's kind of where we're from in terms of downloads. That's some of the episodes that have been top episodes. You know, other than that, kind of what's it like running a podcast? Sometimes working with a podcast guest is a little bit like herding sheep. You know, these are entrepreneurs that are on the go. A lot of times, you know, they're not great at details. And so they might, you know, miss the podcast. They might have put in an email that doesn't sync to their calendar when they book podcasts, or because they're busy people, life happens and stuff comes up. And so we're constantly kind of rescheduling episodes, canceling schedules. I show up on a podcast and the guest doesn't show up on the podcast. And then I reach out to them and usually they're apologetic and get something on the schedule within the next week and then are amazing. But it is a challenge, right? You're working with very busy people. And like I said, people where details aren't necessarily naturally the first thing that they're good at. And so that's kind of the back end, some of the fun stuff that happens. But for me, I always try to keep 2, 3, or 4 episodes out recorded, scheduled on the books, and then I just keep going. And you know, we have a 2, 3, 4 week lead time, so depending on how close things are, we might schedule 2 or 3 guests in the same day that record, and then we're good for the next month. So it is quite a balance, but that's a little bit of behind the scenes stuff. And then finally, I just want to close with some of the action items. So some of my top learnings that I've had running this show: number one, by far, you don't know what you're going to like until you try. So taking action and getting in and taking action. A great example of this is right now, my son is going through basketball tryouts. And so much like a lot of kids, right, they're deciding what sports they want to play. And so my now 11-year-old plays basketball, plays football, and plays baseball. Well, for him, he's still kind of at the spot where his favorite sport's the one that he's playing. But for some people, that's not the case. And they're trying to decide, like, do I want to play this sport or not? Some people now this year for basketball, so this is coming up on year 3 now where they have a travel team. There's people that haven't played competitively, aren't necessarily great at it, but they really love it. There's people that haven't played it before, but their friends are playing it, so they're joining and having fun. And then there's people that have played it, realized, you know what, basketball's not for me, so I don't want to do it anymore. Or people realizing basketball is a great sport, but I don't necessarily want to do it at a highly competitive level that travel is, so maybe I'm just going to do rec league. So to take that example and translate that to you, how are you going to know what you love doing inside of real estate unless you start doing it, right? The best way to find out is start doing it, or find an easy way in. Just get yourself in the industry, get yourself involved in something you're interested on the side, or help somebody out as a way to learn if you're going to like it, right? So you're not going to know whether, you know, I'm not going to try out for an NBA team with no experience, right? Because the NBA team's going to look at me and be like, well, Mike, what else have you done? Well, I've studied it a lot. I've listened to a lot of podcasts, so I know a lot about basketball. I know the rules of basketball, and I know what I'm supposed to do. I know the defenses, I know the offense, and all that stuff. So why don't you hire me to be on your team? And they're going to say no, because you haven't played, right? Well, I mean, I did play up until high school, but I haven't played at that level. And so you're going to have to get in, get some experience, maybe at a lower pay scale than what you want, maybe something on the side, maybe doing something for free. But that's how you're going to find out if you like doing it. And if you're good at doing it, there's also a difference between what you like doing and what you're good at doing. They may not necessarily line up. And so you may decide to do something you're good at and don't like to start, to find something that you like that maybe you're not as good at yet, but you're going to get the experience to get better. So you've got to get in it to find out if it's something that you enjoy doing. So that to me is lesson number one. Kind of in the same side, fortune favors the action takers. I prided myself growing up on being a relatively good student, right? I really focused on grades and my college prep scores and my class rank to get into a good school. And then I got into a good school and I went into entrepreneurship and I realized everybody that was kicking my butt in entrepreneurship were all the kids that didn't really care about school, didn't try hard in school, because they're out doing other things. They're taking action on other things. The thing I was taking action on was getting good grades. And so fortune favors those action takers, those people that are out there doing it. You're never going to have 100% certainty on anything. So if I'm investing in something or I'm making that leap, I'm not going to know if it's going to work with 100% certainty. And I can listen to podcasts, I can study books, I can talk to a lot of people, but I don't know if it's going to work 100% until I do it. And so there's that piece in your gut, there's that hole in your gut where you're going to have to jump over it and say, I'm going to try it anyhow. And that leads me to my next lesson, which is learning how to problem solve and pivot is a learned skill from practice. If I don't uncover any problems, or if I don't go through any problems, how am I gonna get better at problem solving, right? Now I can take a lot of analysis and hopefully mitigate my problems, but if you're gonna get better and you're gonna get sharper, you're gonna have to go through problems, right? A professional athlete goes through adversity. They go through injuries, they go through life change. It sharpens them and makes them stronger. And so I'm going to come out a better investor because I've gone through problems and challenges. And then, two, learning how to pivot. If something goes wrong, what's in my toolbox? What are my one, two, or three things that I can do to pivot to help solve a problem? Well, then the next time I'm in that situation, I might be able to use those tools that I used last time, or maybe I uncover some new tools to use to learn how to pivot and take action in a different way to solve a problem. But problem solving needs to be learned by solving problems. And so you can't have 100% certainty. You're going to get better at where you're going by solving those problems. And then kind of a couple of other fun facts. Most of my guests, I can pretty confidently say this, unfortunately, I don't have stats behind it, was inspired to get into real estate or to do more in real estate from Robert Kiyosaki, who wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and Cashflow Quadrant. So if you haven't listened to those are two of the most fundamental books that help shape your mind as an entrepreneur and as a business owner. And so those are key ones. And then the other stat is it feels like half the people I talk to are in Austin, Texas. So if you're listening to this in Austin, Texas, you maybe have been a guest on my podcast. You maybe have worked at a company based out of Austin, Texas that I've talked to on the podcast, but it feels like everybody that I know on this podcast is in Austin, Texas. So it's a great playground to be in. If you want to go where entrepreneurs are and movers and shakers in the tech space and real estate space are, Austin is definitely an awesome place to go. So there's the episode 300. We talked a little bit about kind of origin story, tips, why I got into real estate, what you should be doing and thinking about real estate. And that wraps it up. So that's episode 300, 5 years of podcasting. Once again, thank you to you guys. I couldn't have been here without you. If you want to check things out, learn more, freedomthroughrealestate.com. That's our website. That's got most of our stuff on there. But thank you to everybody. Thanks to the guests that shared their wisdom, friends, family who've supported me along the way. I'm so grateful for you. But we're just getting started. We've got another 300 or more on the horizon here. Bigger conversations, great practical insight, stories that are going to help challenge you and inspire you to do even more. And so with that being said, here's to the next 5 years and hopefully 300 plus episodes. So thanks for being in the journey along the way. We'll talk to you in the next episode.
All these different lenders have different abilities to do different things. And if you don't really know all the different things that they can do, then, you know, you might make a call to a hard money lender and they deny a deal. That's a really good deal. But like the guy over here would not deny it. You know, it's just these guys might be, hey, we're private money, but they're really institutional money that's being lent out at a private money rate, where if you really wanted a private money lender, they're over here and they'll lend on it.
Welcome to the Real Freedom Show, where we inspire you to pursue your passion to gain time and financial freedom through opportunities in real estate. I'm your host, Mike Swenson. Let's get some real freedom together. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Real Freedom, Real Estate Leverage Freedom, where we talk about different ways people are building time and financial freedom through opportunities in real estate. I'm your host, Mike Swenson. If you want to get started on your real estate investing journey, check out our website, freedomthroughrealestate.com. We've got great information, videos, all of our past episodes to find somebody that connects with you, find a story, something like that, that resonates, that's going to have you take action and move forward in your real estate investing journey, however that might look. For today, I've got a super exciting episode for you. We've got Nick Price. Nick is a Florida real estate investor broker, founder of First Lending Network, and so has an extensive background in real estate investing and flipping. Now is doing more on the lending side. And fun fact, going to be married here in just a little bit after this episode releases. So doing a destination wedding to Italy. And so we were talking about that offline, just a ton of cool stuff. So Nick, excited to have you on the show and excited to hear more about your story.
Thanks, Mike. Super happy to be here.
Talk a little bit about your background, just kind of a quick water ski of kind of what you've done in real estate. And then we'll dig in a little bit deeper from there.
Sure. So I'm a licensed real estate broker. I've been in real estate since 2018. I've been learning about real estate since like 2016. And then I'm the founder of First Lending Network, and we have lending partners in most of the states. There's two states that we don't have any lending partners in right now is California and Arizona, but working on those. And then I also have a background in co-living. So I went from, we went from 21 units to 115 units in co-living, and did all that in the Tampa Bay area. So I've done kind of pretty much everything in the last 6 years. I always joke and say that I started working for a guy that was retired private equity, and it turned into like a masterclass executive MBA in real estate investing. That's kind of my background.
Talk a little bit about why real estate for you. What was it about real estate? You mentioned that you had, you know, been studying real estate before you dove in, but thinking about, you know, working a regular job, whatever that might look like, a regular career path outside of real estate, what was it that attracted you to real estate?
Yeah. So it's kind of funny. I actually saw this funny meme the other day where it talks about like your hospitality journey, and it's like dishwasher, busser, server, bartender, real estate agent. And it made me laugh because like, that's kind of what my life was I got started in hospitality, and I worked, kind of what got me into real estate is there's a couple different things, but the main thing was when I was working, I worked at this like higher end country club resort called Innisbrook, just outside Tampa. And it's where they hold the Valspar Championship. So they do like the PGA Tour events. You have a bunch of members there that are business owners in the community. And I started there, and I started as a server, and then eventually became a bartender. And when I shifted from being a server to the bartender, I found that I started having more like in-depth conversations. Like as a server, it was more so just kind of turning tables and doing whatever I needed to do. And then when I became the bartender, I started talking to people more. And I was in awe one day when we did this private party for a guy that owned a title agency. And I didn't know what a title agency was back then. I like super green to real estate at this point. And I just knew that it was Vantage, like the, whatever the title agent was called. And his Christmas party was $91,000, and they had an automatic gratuity on it. And then he tipped another $15,000 on top of it for everybody that was there, because we were there for like 20 hours. And I was like, wow, that's insane. I've never seen something like that before in my life. And so I specifically started talking to him like, hey, you know, like, how did you become wealthy, like to the point where you can afford that kind of like a party? And then he told me he owned a title company in all 50 states and was going to sell it at the end of the year for $184 million or something. And so I started asking every member. So everyone that was coming to the bar, I started asking him like, you know, how did you get wealthy? And there was a constant theme, and it was always through business or through real estate. And I have a entrepreneurship degree. I went to school for entrepreneurship. And so I had already known about business, and I was building businesses while in school. And then the real estate thing kind of dawned on me like, oh, well, real estate is a business, right? It's also a business, but it's also like a trade. And so the more and more I started talking to members, the more and more I realized that almost all of them, whether they were in real estate as a business, they were in real estate in some fashion. So whether they owned condos in the condo pool in the resort, or they owned multifamily properties or commercial space or whatever. And so I really, from that moment on, I started just digging into everything I could learn about real estate and real estate private equity, and kind of like, how do you invest in real estate when you have no money? And it just took me down a long path of learning. And then I got an opportunity in 2018 to go work as a transaction manager for a real estate, residential real estate team. And then I went from transaction manager to listing manager to then I was doing tech and admin for all of the agents. And then I got licensed after that, because I started seeing how much money the real estate agents were making compared to what I was making as an admin. And I was like, I feel like I could do this. And so then I went and got licensed, and then I started my career from there. And then after getting licensed, I got an opportunity to go work for the retired private equity guy, building out the co-living, basically the co-living business, and learning everything about zoning analysis, financial analysis, construction, property management, refinancing, everything I could. So it's kind of a weird journey, but I started my career off wanting to be in business through the entrepreneurship program. And then it led me to real estate over time as I learned more about like building wealth.
Well, that's very similar to me. Entrepreneurship degree, then real estate admin, got my license, and then started working with investing. So two peas awesome. In a pod, right?
Yep, that's right.
So talk a little bit about co-living then. For people that may not know, it's a little bit more of a hot topic now. You started way back when, but for people that are, you know, kind of interested in co-living, you know, give them kind of a 101 here of what it is.
Yeah, so co-living is like, it's become a newer trend in real estate investing in the States, but it's like a very common thing that's always existed. It's just never been named co-living or shared housing. And if you look over in like Asia and Europe and some of the other places around the world, there's a lot of co-living that already exists. And you have all your different types of co-living. So you have like your high-end co-living that's like focused on digital nomads, and they want all the experiences and all the amenities and super nice housing and to be right in the mix. And then you have it all the way down to the other end of the spectrum where you have co-living that's just for affordability. So there's a ton of that going on right now, and it's kind of exploding. There's one big player in the space right now called PadSplit that is kind of like the marketplace for co-living. And so take it as like the Airbnb for co-living. And they're at like 24,000 units nationwide. So it's grown really fast. But in between those two players, there's like all different types of co-living brands, whether they're one-offs or they're just someone that has a house that they live in one of the rooms and they rent out four other rooms in the house. But it's essentially like a, depending on which model you go, there's like the membership model where it's not rooms for rent. And then there's rooms for rent model where it is rooms for rent. And different municipalities will have different laws, pertaining to each of those.
So what was your role then working with the retired guy, kind of helping him with the co-living stuff?
Well, it's funny because, you know, like we said, we have this similar background in like the admin space, and I was doing a lot of the marketing stuff. And so I actually got brought on board to do the marketing. And then the first day of work was, hey, I know we're here to do marketing, but I want you to look at this piece of land and figure out what exactly you could build on it. So it very quickly shifted from like a marketing role to like doing the zoning analysis and figuring out, okay, if you have this lot and it's zoned for this, what can be built? What are the setbacks? Where can the house go? How much, you know, floor area ratio is allowed? How much impervious surface area is allowed? How many bedrooms and bathrooms can we fit in? How can we design the house to be most efficient? All that stuff. So that's kind of like what started. And then it very quickly turned into like a development role where I was focusing on acquiring properties, doing the build outs, working with the GCM vendors, the architects, going through the full permitting process, essentially kind of working like an owner's rep and doing all the stuff that the owner's rep would do. And then setting them up and then staging them, like doing the furnishing and staging, doing all the listings, getting them marketed, finding the potential members, you know, interviewing them, setting up the houses, making sure everything was going good. Then it went into the property management. So we basically did everything. We were building a vertically integrated system where we did everything from acquisitions to complete lease up. And then I decided after kind of looking at all the opportunities that lending was one of the opportunities that I really wanted to focus on. And so that's how I got into First Lending Network from co-living.
Real quick then, just to back up, were these single family homes? Were these multifamily homes? Single and family. Was kind of the idea just to, I mean, for better or worse, kind of you stuff as many bedrooms as you can into what you've got?
The goal was to deliver like rent at half of what the market rent is, because there was no option. So why I fell in love with it the most was my background with entrepreneurship led me into like this startup bus world where it's like a hackathon on a bus. But I always kind of had I've never had a ton of belongings. I've like acquired more as I've gotten a little bit older, but I've never really had a ton of things, just kind of my computer, my backpack and my duffel bag. And so I fell in love with the business model because it was like, oh wow. If this existed when I was in school at USF St. Pete, like I would have totally lived in one of these because it was like less than $1,000 and it was furnished. It had all utilities included. It had social events. It had cleaning. It had everything you could imagine. And so I fell in love with the business model, really, because I said, wow, this provides an opportunity to people that they wouldn't otherwise have, right? And then you build the network and the support system and you make new friends. And that just doesn't really exist outside of co-living. Like if you think about a traditional apartment, you know, you need to have 3 times the income requirement. You need to do first, last, and security deposit, which could be, you know, if you're doing a 1-bedroom in St. Peter, Tampa right now, that's probably like $6,000-$7,000. So like, that's a lot of money for a college kid to just come up with to get into a place. And so you would see people just kind of get apartments together and share it organically. And so when I saw that this was a professionalized version of this sharing economy, I fell in love with it because it's like, this is perfect. Like someone's coming from Canada or they're coming from Tokyo and they don't know anybody here. They're immediately ingrained into a friend group. They build a support system that they have here and everything's taken care of for them. There's no, hey, I got to do deposits for electric, water, and, you know, internet. There's like, everything's just turnkey. And that's really what I fell in love with the most.
I mean, I think in a lot of ways, you know, you think about in entrepreneurship, right? It's solving business problems. And this solves a lot of problems for a lot of people. You've got affordable housing in general, but then just the being able to make housing easier is another one. And then, you know, the furnished piece, right? You know, having a furnished rental, there's just so many different boxes that it checks. And I will quick mention, I wish I would have known this up front. I would have looked it up, but we actually did have a high-level employee from PadSplit on a podcast. I think it was about 2.5 years ago. Talking about the idea. And so PadSplit is not yet here in Minnesota, but I did talk with a sales rep probably a month or two ago just about their future plans and stuff like that. I know Minnesota's on the shorter list, but not the short list. And so talked with them about, you know, what can we do here locally to make that work? Because I see a ton of value in it. And obviously it's become more popular now, but excited for you to have such an awesome role and to be in a spot where you can kind of do everything from soup to nuts and take it all the way from the beginning, all the way then. So that's fantastic. And just a great learning experience. I think the thing to highlight here for you is for people looking to get in real estate or wanting to go further in real estate, don't be so concerned about kind of where you get started. It's just get in, do something, and you'll either figure out you like that a lot or you like something else and you'll kind of slowly move. But you got in on the admin side, got a chance to learn something different, use the skills that you had previously as a bartender, you know, working in hospitality, and apply it. And then now got a chance to do that into co-living and now moving into First Lending Network. So it's cool to see how people's paths shake out in real estate. But tell us a little bit more about what excited you about the lending side now.
I want to touch on that part too for the people that might not be in real estate yet, because that was one thing for me where when I was an admin, I was like, I don't know if I should get licensed. I don't know if I want to be a real estate agent. I don't know if I want to do that. And I had a friend who's unlicensed, but is in like, he invests on his own and does his own work. And he looked at me and he goes, why wouldn't you get it? He's like, I don't think you understand the power in that. Like if you were to get your real estate license, it's going to open up so many more doors than you ever thought were possible. And when he said that to me, I really took it to heart and I went home and I started thinking about it. I was like, you know what? He's right. And I'm so glad he said that to me because that changed my perspective on it and made me go get licensed. And it literally did open up a world of opportunity to me. And that's kind of like looking at opportunity is how I got to First Lending Network. I started realizing that like there's so many real estate investors that do things different ways, right? Like you have people that do subject to and novations, you have people that do seller financing, you have people that use different types of financials to like acquire properties. And I started looking at all that as real opportunity. And then I started kind of talking to my friends that use hard money or private money financing and picking their brain and, you know, doing the refinances. I got to see a lot of like the DSCR loans. I got to see a lot of like investment property loans or business loans or commercial loans. And so I started seeing there's all these different lenders. And then talking to my friends, I'm like, you know, do you shop out your hard money loans? And they're like, no, I've just been using the same guy for 10 years. And then I started thinking to myself, maybe that's an opportunity because there's so many different, like, just in Tampa, there's probably like 30 hard money lenders. And then there's probably like 30 you don't even know about because they're not on Google, right? And so I started building a network of all these guys. that do different things, because you have like your institutional hard money, and then you have your private money, and then you have your asset-based lending. So like there's even like in hard money loans alone, there's multiple different types of lenders that you could use. And so what I wanted to do was build a network of all these lenders where someone could come to us. They would have an education and knowledge base on the website that gives them all the info they could possibly want about all the different types of loan products that are out there for non-QM loans. So not consumer loans, just all investment and business purpose loans. And then give them the opportunity, if they wanted to get referred, that we refer them to a handful of lenders and try to basically shop it out. So that's where I've come up with First Lending Network. And now that's what we're doing. Like I just funded a $4 million portfolio loan through one of my lenders. And we just did a $220,000 condo loan that was like an unwarrantable condo. So it's interesting how like all these different lenders have different abilities to do different things. And if you don't really know all the different things that they can do, then, you know, you might make a call to a hard money lender and they deny a deal. That's a really good deal. But like the guy over here would not deny it. You know, it's just these guys might be, hey, we're private money, but they're really institutional money that's being lent out at a private money rate, where if you really wanted a private money lender, they're over here and they'll lend on it.
You know, backing it up a few steps, something that's important for people to understand, especially people that haven't been on the real estate investment side, is number one, because I see this in like social media comments on, you know, posts about investing in real estate. They're like, well, I don't make enough money to be able to invest in real estate. Because people's initial thoughts about lending is, if I go to buy my house, right, what do? They go check my personal income, my personal credit, and then they see what's your debt to income ratio. Yep. And okay, so if you're close, great. You know, that's how we got our first loan. Completely blow that thinking out of the water. Anything that you have thoughts about how a residential loan is different on the commercial side. Now, yeah, sometimes, you know, people are going to care about your credit. People might care about income. But as it comes to investment loans, a lot of times they're concerned about the property itself. And so I remember this aha moment I had when I talked to a commercial lender as I was doing more on the commercial side or starting to work with investors. And he's like, yeah, we just look at the income of the property and the expenses. And that's really what we base our lending decision on, not how much money you make in your personal job. And I was like, oh, so like a real common sense approach to lending.
Yeah,
and he's exactly. Like, yes. And so for people listening to that, you've got to just break your way of thinking of like, oh, I don't have to make more money on my W-2 job or whatever I am outside of real estate to be able to invest. You may have, if you're completely new to it, you may want to partner with somebody who has done it before, because a lender may want to see some experience, but right. You don't have to take your preconceived notions about how a residential loan works and apply it to investing in real estate. And then from there, hopefully that opens up your mind to think, oh my gosh, I can do a lot more on the investing side, because that's really a key for people. So obviously, yeah, what you're building is amazing. There's a ton of need there, but just for people that maybe haven't been exposed to the commercial side, it's yeah. So different from the residential side. And the agents on the team that I work on that don't deal with investment, they just have a hard time getting their brain wrapped around that simple concept.
Yeah, it's definitely true. I hear that a lot too, where it's like, oh, it's a second mortgage loan. And it's like, yeah, you could go that way. But they're going to look at they're going to look at your DTI. They're going to look at all your personal income, your everything like that. Whereas like the DSCR lenders are going to look at exactly what you said. How much money does it rent for? What's your mortgage? What's your expenses? Do you cover the mortgage? If it covers the mortgage, then it could work for them. And there's all sorts of different DSCR lenders that do like, some do 30 years, some do 40 years, some do 10% down, some do 30% down. So that's a whole nother world of like shopping out a rental property lender. But then you have the guys too that do asset-based lending, and they don't care about credit scores. They don't care about backgrounds. They don't care. All they care about is what's the asset worth today. And I'll lend 70 to 75% of what it's worth today. Now it's probably a more expensive loan, and that's just part of it. But I look at that like an opportunity for people that have never flipped a property, or someone that's been flipping with their own money and using all cash. It's like, hey, if you're using $500,000 of your own cash to flip every single time, you could probably do 4 or 5 flips if you used private money. And it's just, you know, you're paying, you know, anywhere from 10 to 12% interest on your money. But if it helps you do four more flips in that same 90 day timeline, you have a lot more money coming back to you than you spend in interest. So it's really neat when you start looking at all the different things. And like, as you get into bigger deals too, like there's all sorts of different lenders that will do like infrastructure build outs for, you know, neighborhoods and I mean, everything you can imagine. So I think that's, for me, what was so cool was just like the more I dug into it, the more I just found like there's so many options for people. And like you said, a lot of people think like, oh, I don't make enough money, I'll never get a loan. And it's like, that's not the case in the private world. That's all. Yeah. In consumer loans, if you don't have the money and you're trying to buy a house, they're not going to approve you, you know, but if you're doing it as an investment or in the business world, and there's money to be made on the table, like there's a good chance that it'll get done.
And to your point, like it's such a great opportunity to have, because even on the commercial side, people think like, oh, I talked to one bank or I talked to two banks and one of them said no. And so now that means I can't move forward with my project. And no, it's kind of a matchmaking service, right? You've got to partner up what you're wanting to do with the lender that's excited about doing the deals that are similar to what you like to do. And obviously the rates are going to be adjusted based on the risk and all that kind of stuff. However, look at it as more of you're trying to put a puzzle together, not I'm just getting denied, no, everywhere I go. It's probably because you just haven't found the lender that's excited about what you're working on. And so you've got to find the person that's excited to loan on what you're doing.
Exactly. Yep. And there's plenty of them. There's plenty of them that are more than ready to help people like create wealth, make money. And obviously they make money, right? So like their job is to lend money to make money. But a lot of them want to see their clients succeed. Almost every lender that I talk to says, I never want to take over a property. So it's not like they're out here just trying to snatch up properties. They want their clients to succeed.
Are you looking to get started or scale in real estate investing, but don't know your next step? Are you overwhelmed thinking about finding deals, analyzing deals, doing due diligence, and managing properties on top of it? Go ahead and push the easy button and invest with us. Real estate investing is what we do full time. We've done dozens of deals with hundreds of doors. We have the knowledge and experience to handpick the best deals that most investors can't find. We've got large off-market deals all the time where you can hopefully find returns and economies of scale that you just can't find on your own. The best thing is it's 100% passive to you, for less capital than you put down trying to acquire a property on your own. Don't let this year go by where you don't make the leap, add to your portfolio, or you just sit in analysis by paralysis. To find out more, visit freedomthroughrealestate.com and click on invest. You can book a call and learn more there. So get to scaling your portfolio now with us by your side. So talk about your growth and finding lenders. How does that work? You mentioned 48 states. So obviously You've got to get connected with a lot of people and a lot of different loan products. So talk about that process.
Yeah. So I've been doing a whole bunch of outreach just to new lenders and trying to meet as many as I can. So if there is any of them that listen to your podcast, I'd be happy to talk to them and add them to our list. I just had, from doing all that stuff for the last 6 years, I'd made so many personal connections in the Tampa Bay area that I had a huge network of lenders to begin with. And so I started with them. And then as I started moving into other places, I started noticing that a lot of the lenders that I had are already operating in a bunch of the other states. So then it just became, okay, for the guys that are like kind of putting it on my side, like who's doing what in what states, and then just going out and meeting people and talking to people and making phone calls has been how I've built all the lenders. But there's, you'd be surprised at how many lenders exist in the world. But like the other thing is you got to vet them and make sure that they're actually lenders that can lend. Cause there's a lot of people out there that say that they do private money and they can lend on deals and stuff like that, but not all of them can fulfill their obligations. So making sure we vet them out and making sure that they're a good asset for our people has been another part of the process.
So how does that process work? So if I've got a project that I'm looking to fill, where does that start with you guys?
Yeah, so it would really depend on what type of project it is. So is it a fix and flip? Is it a rental property? Is it a portfolio refinance? Is it a ground up new construction? Is it a multifamily development? Whatever the case may be, then I kind of have the different buckets of different lenders that lend on different things. So we would take a look at what the project is and what they're looking for. And then from there, we would start reaching out to lenders to see if they have appetite for it pretty quickly too. And then we just kind of pair them up with a couple different ones. And, you know, we look through and see who's got the best like fit for what their project is. And then we'll pair them up and they can talk to the lender and go from there. So it really depends on what type of project it is. Like if it's a fix and flip and it's in the Tampa Bay area, I have like 19 lenders that do that. But if it's like, hey, I want to build a $10 million multifamily complex, then I only have a couple people that I can go to for that because it's such a larger amount of financing. So it really just depends on what they're looking to do. But, you know, there's plenty of DSCR guys out there. There's plenty of, I really think DSCR is a hack that a lot of people don't even know about. Like when I say DSCR, it's like, what are you talking about? And it's just basically a rental property loan, debt service coverage ratio. So it would just depend on what kind of loan they're looking for. And then we can work within our network to help them figure it out.
Yeah. I mean, DSCR is all we use for our apartment buildings, right? It's, you know, like you talked about before, right? We've got the income coming in. Can we pay off the expenses in the loan? And is there enough cushion there? And that's really what the lenders are looking for. And if there's enough cushion there, then great.
And you'd be surprised how like competitive they want to be too. Like some of them will reduce their requirements on what the multiplier is to be more competitive. Someone will reduce the down payment that's needed. Some of them can refinance if there's enough equity in the property and they don't even need any closing costs or down payment. So it's like really neat when you start talking to everybody about all the different things that they can do. There's a ton of options.
Yeah, I think, you know, going back to what we've already talked about, I think for people listening, it's realizing that there's a lot of opportunity in the lending side that people want to work with you, right? I think so many times people think like you said, you know, in terms of finding a loan, it's like you're just looking for somebody to say no to you. But there's a lot of people that want to say yes. And it's just probably because you haven't found that right person. And so for somebody looking to do a lot in real estate, it's just finding the right person that can be like, you know, adding gasoline onto your growth. Now it's, you know, how many deals can I find that they want to say yes to? And so there's a ton of opportunity in the lending. And so you're providing a great service and helping people to do that, to pair up that right fit with what that person is trying to do.
Yeah. Even if they're high net worth and they want to be the lender, that's a really good opportunity for people too. Like if they, you know, have some extra money and they want to lend out to their friends that are doing deals, like that's a good way to make money and have it collateralized by a real estate asset. So there's a lot of opportunity in lending just in general.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Nick, for coming on and sharing. For people that want to reach out to you, learn more about First Lending Network, how can they do so?
We're on all social media platforms as at First Lending. We have a YouTube channel called The Real Estate Capital Source, but the tag is actually at First Lending. And then if they go to firstlendingnetwork.com, we have a whole frequently asked questions section, a whole bunch of educational resources for people to go look at. You can reach out to me through the website, or you can get me at nick@firstlendingnetwork.com.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing. Exciting to hear your story, and best of luck to you guys in the future, and best of luck to you on the upcoming wedding.
Yes, very exciting. Thank you so much. Appreciate the time.